Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022. Practical spirituality. Positive messages. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from way west Texas. I'm actually in the town of Alpine, Texas, in a parking lot of all places. But luckily I've got some service, so we're excited to do the show. Today I welcome psychologist and therapist Cindy Goodman-Stolberg, who along with her writing partner, Ronald J. Frey, have written a marvelous book clearly laying out the essential elements of their therapy system, which is interpersonal psychotherapy. The book's entitled Feeling Better, Beat Depression, and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychology. Cindy and Ronald co-founded the Institute for Interpersonal Psychotherapy. And this book is aimed at bringing this very practical therapy and modality to a wider audience. So it's a pleasure to welcome Cindy to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to speak to you and your listeners today.
Absolutely. We're so glad you can be with us. And I enjoyed the book, by the way. It's not great. Done in chapters, it's done in weeks, so there's 12 weeks, and that's the basic outline of the therapy system, right? You work 12 weeks, and we'll talk more detail about that. How would you respond to people that say, well, before you can change anybody else or change your life, you have to change yourself? So what's all this about other people first? You know, don't I have to change myself?
A very common question and a common idea, but I think you're probably doing both at the same time. It's not that we're changing other people and not ourselves, but what we're doing is we understand mood difficulties based on the relationships you have. It's not inside of you. It's not in your head or your thoughts. It's basically based on if you have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, you're going to feel better. And if you're struggling with mood difficulties and you work on these relationships, you're going to really improve your mood more quickly. So that's really the basis of IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy.
And as you say, you know, it's about how you respond, isn't it? What you choose, because so often we're in reactive or judgmental modes about life and about others and about ourselves. And so this is aiming at being more healthful, if you like, more creatively helpful to yourself, I would say, right? Rather than sabotaging ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, for an example, the way I communicate with someone, if I'm annoyed with my partner and I say, oh, why do you always do that? You're such a jerk. I mean, it's likely not going to be as effective as, could we sit down and talk? I'm concerned about this, right? So being able to really teach people and give them opportunities to do it differently, right? Because I often really ask the question, how is what you're doing now working for you? And if it's not working for you, then we give you some alternatives to try out and see if it works better.
Yeah, there was a time in when I was reading the book, and it sounded a lot like some of the work that Byron Katie does, you know, in terms of the work, you know, is this really true? And how do I know it's true? Mm-hmm. What would it be like if I didn't have that, you know? Right. In other words, giving yourself the ability to reframe, right, to look anew at something. Because I think so often we feel like we're locked in, you know, there's no other options. Yes. And what you're saying is there's always other options. There's always other ways to look at things, right?
And IPT really helps people explore that because, you know, I think the other thing is you need to ask the other person, how do I know it's true? Well, why don't I ask someone, are you angry at me? Are you upset? Is there anything I could do differently? And once you have that conversation, and if you listen to what someone else is saying and you express what you're feeling and saying, then you're going to clarify things a lot better than you might currently, right?
I agree completely because, you know, my wife and I do this a lot, you know, instead of getting into an argument because one person assumes something about the other, you know, we check it out. We say, right now I'm feeling this way, you know, is this true? Are you feeling this way? Whatever. And it diffuses it, right? Because instead of personalizing it, you have the opportunity to say, okay, well, maybe I don't need to take that quite the way I was going to, right?
Absolutely.
It could be much more healthy, you know, and more, and you have a better relationship, basically.
Well, you're not fighting all the time.
Right, you're not fighting all the time.
You're not getting annoyed. And a lot of it is also about expectations, right? So one of the things that's great about IPT is that it's not about are you right or wrong? Are you good or bad? It's about, are my expectations realistic? Are they reasonable? And what about the other person? Do they have the same expectations of themselves and me as well? So that's a huge part and component of IPT.
It seems there's so it's prevalent that we just want to avoid things, you know, and the best way to avoid something is to project it on somebody else. Mm-hmm. It seems, and you know, having 30 some years experience as a minister, you know, I see this over and over, this projection of our own feelings on others, you know, and an ability to, and I guess you'd say, well, church should be a place of love, you know, but really it's a spiritual hospital. It's where we, you know, it's a safe space where we can look at the worst of ourselves, right? Okay. But so often, you know, over the years, I've seen people just projecting all kinds of things on others, and and they can't see it for themselves. And of course, this whole modality that you're presenting is stopping that, isn't it? It's taking it home. It's owning it.
And it's also like you're talking about, really, so church or any religious institution is a community, and there are so many people there that you can learn from. Right. So by connecting with other people who may be experiencing certain things that you're experiencing as well, not only if you're willing to try to share with them, right, your situation, you're going to learn from them, and you're also not going to feel as alone. Right. So in IPT, your, you know, interpersonal inventory, as we call it, your social circle, which really is all your relationships, are very crucial to how you function and how you feel, which you probably see that with your congregations and the people in it, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's walk through the weeks, shall we?
Yes.
And talk a little bit about each one. We're not going to cover everything. It's a big book. And by the way, folks, if you'd like to get the book, it's available. It's published by a New World Library, which is one of my favorite book publishers. But of course, it's available in all the usual outlets. And if people want to get in touch with you by chance, do you have a
let them contact me at Feeling Better the Book, which is an easier thing to remember, feelingbetterthebook.com, or Cindy Stolberg, which will be on your website, I think, as well, at gmail.com. So either way, Feeling Better the Book. And yeah, I think it's a very readable book, hopefully, with lots of examples that people who are reading it can relate to.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So should I get started with the first steps in IPT in the first week is really to know that any mood difficulties you're having are not your fault. You don't need to blame yourself. You don't need to beat yourself up. Haven't done anything wrong that you're feeling, you're struggling with your mood. It really can be looked at and as an illness. And the originators of the model were Drs. Klerman and Wiseman. This has been around since the 1960s. And they felt that, you know, mood and depression was the same as if you had a broken leg and you needed to take some time, educate yourself. We educate people as to what's involved in their mood difficulties. And really tell other people, too, that you're going to work hard at trying to feel better. and you may not be able to do as many things as you always do, but you're going to be working on improving how you feel. So that's the start of it. And then I think, as you saw, was looking at your relationships in a different way. So rather, as I said, than looking at them as good and bad, you need to kind of draw yourself a little map or do it, you know, just on your own and say, what do I like about certain relationships? What don't I like about that relationship? What would I like to change? So that's a second step, which absolutely we can elaborate on. And then what happens next is commonly there are four areas that people struggle with when they're struggling with their mood. And one of them is conflict or disputes. One of them is unresolved bereavement. If, let's say, you've lost a loved one many, many years ago, but you still feel as profoundly sad as you did when they died, or you never grieved the loss, that's can help contribute to depression. And also transitions. If you're divorced, if you're having a baby, if you're going through difficulties, you know, if you're, you know, starting a new job or you've lost a job. And the fourth area is loneliness and isolation. So, you know, do you, Paul, see that as pretty common with people who talk to you about
Absolutely.
Their struggles?
Yeah. And what's cool about the book is that you have four people, you know, representatives of these four areas, and so that's a sort of something that continues through the whole book. So we get to follow these guys, and because they're named, it's not too abstract. You know, we get the sense of actually working with somebody, and we can feel it ourselves because we've all been through all these various aspects that you're talking about. One thing that I just want to go back to the broken leg analogy, and I like that analogy because it's sort of defangs it, you know.
It's, yes. It's,
you know, but the thing is, when we're in depression, when we're feeling less than in some way, we don't reach out. You know, we might, if we got a broken leg, yeah, everybody wants to sign the you know,
cast.
The cast. But when you're depressed, the last thing you want to do is, and I found this to be so true in ministry too. You know, when people are in most need of church or the community, they don't come. You know, because they don't feel good, they don't want to be around people. So how do you deal with that? Because I think that's a real need too. This idea that when I'm down, I don't want to work on my relationships.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think people say that often. And what we really do, and when one of the other advantages of comparing it to a broken leg is we're really trying to destigmatize mental health. Because, you know, sure, people don't mind. We, you know, if you help someone say, well, if you had a broken leg, wouldn't you call your friend who wanted to have coffee with you and say, oh, do you mind driving? I can't drive these days, right? But we try to make them say, well, guess what? You're struggling also. And so why not say, do you mind driving? Or why don't you come over and we'll have a cup of coffee here? We really make sure that we encourage people to push themselves. If you're going to feel any better, you're going to have to, even though you don't feel like it, sometimes go, sometimes connect with someone, and then you say to the person, just try it and see how you feel. And
right.
Ultimately, it's up to them. The other thing I often say to people as well is, what if your friend was really depressed or feeling bad? Would you want them, that people will say, I don't want to burden other people with my problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, what would you want your friend to feel that way about you? If they were struggling, would you want them to talk to you and let you know how they're feeling? Or would you want them not to burden you? So people really see that once they say, well, that's okay, I'm here for them. So then you say, well, guess what? A relationship does work both ways. And have they helped you at times? Are you able to help them? That's what really brings people together, is that shared reciprocal opportunities to care for one another. So those are the things that I often encourage people to do. And even like if you say to someone, well, guess what? After you broke your leg, you had to go to rehab and you had to work on it, even if you didn't feel like it, right? So you say, well, guess what? This is your rehabilitation exercises.
Mm-hmm.
call the person up, and we practice what they're going to say. So it's not like we're leaving people. We walk them through the conversation and help them practice. Well, what am I going to say when I speak to my friend? What are they going to think about me? So we go through each of those steps very clearly so that the reader has information to use when they want to reach out.
You know, there's an apocryphal saying of Jesus where it says, you know, if a man is intent upon, I know it's a sort of a violent analogy, if a man is intent upon killing somebody, you know, first of all, he practices with his sword, you know, pushing it through a wall or whatever to make sure that he can do the deed, and then he goes and does it. And, you know, we're not encouraging anybody to kill anybody else, but I think what Jesus is saying there in that apocryphal saying is, you know, you have to rehearse it. You know, you have to see if you've got the willingness, the guts, and the courage to do the act, right? And same in the book. You know, you mentioned rehearsing some things so that you get good at it. I mean, we rehearse plays so that we can you know, perform well, and that's the same idea. By the way, that you mentioned the circle, right? Drawing a social circle. And I did that for myself. You know,
great.
Yeah, it was interesting.
How'd you find it? Isn't it an interesting thing to do? It's surprising.
It was.
Isn't it?
It was. And it was hard, though, to know which circle to put some people in because, you know, and often I may have the man on one circle and the woman on the other, you know, say if they're a couple or whatever. You know, but that seemed okay.
You can do it whatever way you want.
Right.
No right or wrong.
But I noticed that, you know, there's not that many people on the inner circle, right? It's that's few and far between. I had large amounts as it went further out, you know, towards acquaintance. But it's very rare, isn't it, to have more than just a few really soul friends, you know, people that you could really talk to, right?
And that's okay. You don't need a lot of them, but if you have a few good people, or if you have, can nurture your relationships with your family as well and create those for yourself, then they'll be there. And when you meet them, and it also depends on how much you want to, I mean, everyone has a different comfort level of how close they want to be with other people, right? And also the, you know, your wider circle. I'm sure, you know, you have so many congregants or people you talk to. They can't all be in the middle, you know.
Right, exactly.
But having a good few people who care about you and you care about them is really crucial. I mean, we look at how we see this every day in the news or media, that being lonely is really detrimental to our health, right?
Absolutely.
That connecting socially with others is critically important, you know?
Well, even with our pets, you know, we did a show last week about Soul Dog, this wonderful woman who had a real connection with her dog at a deep level. And, you know, and that can be nurturing. But I think there's, you know, it's been proven, right, that people who have pets have lower blood pressure or whatnot, you know, then they live longer or whatever, because they are stepping outside of themselves again, right? They're into that connectedness. It's not just all about me, you know, that it's wonderful to give, right, because we receive so much in the giving. And that's part of interpersonal relationships, I think, you know, is releasing the tight need to be in control all the time, right? And allow the wonders of the universe to happen for us, right?
Sure. And I think the idea of control can be a really difficult one. I think when you get into conflicts or a dispute with someone, you really want to figure out if you can change that, right? Because it's very stressful. Any time that you're having trouble with a partner or a work colleague or a parent or a loved one or anyone or a child, you're going to feel stressed by it, right? So we want to help take you step by step of how to identify what the issues are between you and the other person, be able to communicate those as clearly and constructively as possible. And there's different possible outcomes for those conflicts. So the other person may make a change if you're asking them to. You may make a change as to how you're going to behave in that relationship. You both may change. Or the other thing that we encourage people as well to do is, well, what if it bothered you less? If the other person isn't going to change, but you see value in that connection and relationship, let's work on whatever they're doing bothering you less than it does now, right?
Right.
And people often don't think about that, right? And then, it, you know, the last step is if you really believe that it's not going to be a productive relationship and it's going to be too difficult, you can decide to terminate or limit the relationship. So those are the kind of outcomes people can expect when they're working on that problem area, when they're working in terms of conflicts or disputes with others.
And, you know, relationships aren't forever either. I think that's an important thing. You know, they come and they go, right? The, some relationships you have, like I've got some friends from high school, and now with my exalted age, you know, that's 50-some years, you know. But, you know, other people, they come and go. They fulfill their role that you have with them, the sort of contract you have with them, and that's fine. So we shouldn't be afraid of that. But I think what that also suggests to me is there's new friends around the corner that we haven't met yet, right?
Because
of that flow.
Yeah. And you might feel sad if you do lose a friend and you're feeling sad or you're feeling a loss. Well, that's what you're going to feel. And it may take time to deal with those feelings. And then hopefully you have people you can talk to about how you're feeling, right? And then eventually they get tired of listening to you complain about it.
Yeah.
And then you realize that you don't feel the same as you did when you first lost that relationship, right?
Right. So,
and of course you can build new relationships if you choose to or want to, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you that sometimes, you know, some relationships last a long time and some don't, right?
Well, they fulfill themselves. You know, maybe you've learned everything you could learn from that particular relationship or marriage or whatever, you know, and rather than, you're going to be sad when it's over, but you also say, thank you, you know, that was wonderful. And now, you know, I'm moving on to something else or whatever, you know, stay creative about it.
And that's really like you're a great segue into the transition focal area. So let's say you're transitioning and you've either lost a relationship or you know, when you become a new parent, that's a huge transition in your life. Your roles, your relationship with your partner change significantly. Your focus, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're a new parent. And I think being able to look at what was good about the old way before kids and what wasn't so good about it, being able to look at what's good about the situation currently and what is more difficult. What we try to help people do when they go through any transition is instead of idealizing what was and really struggling to feel terrible about the current situation, is we help them with create a more balanced view. So it's almost like we call it reality goggles. You know, it really isn't as bad as you think it is, but let's find a way to feel a little bit more balanced about the old situation and the new situation. And what are the opportunities in the new situation that can be really good for you, joyful for you, and make you feel better, right?
Right. And unfortunately, we are bombarded with TV and movies and pop songs, you know, that speak only to the drama and the sadness of things. We were listening to songs on the way down, you know, and in the car yesterday, and I love them. I mean, they're lovely songs, but after a while, it's enough already, you know, all these people passing away, and it's not the same as it used to be. All right, we're at the break. We'll be back in 2 minutes to talk more about the wonderful book, Feeling Better, with Cindy Stolberg. Join us then after these messages.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's Reverend Paul Hasselbeck with a Unity Teachable Moment, taken from a talk at Unity on the River in Amesbury, Massachusetts.
All good is defined as divine mind, God, and I love this, the principle of divine benevolence that permeates the universe. So God is not good like a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout. God is the good, the principle of benevolence. And benevolence is basically the disposition to do good or to treat others well and things like that. And so in that moment, when you're not wanting to offer grace to somebody, you can remember at the very point of view is this principle of benevolence. And as we remember that, we can draw on it, and then we use that principle to offer grace.
To find more from Reverend Paul Hasselbeck, visit the radio archives at unityonlineradio.org.
Daily Word has developed beautiful card decks to support your spiritual journey. One deck is about healing, another is about finding peace in troubled times, and the family cards are two decks, one for parents and one that can be colored on for children, so families can talk about spiritual principles together. The card decks are available from Unity. Go to unity.org, then click on Shop, or call 1-800-24-UNITY Monday through Friday.
Know yourself as divine. Stations of the Cosmic Christ, a new book from Matthew Fox and Bishop Mark Andrus, introduce a spiritual practice designed to help you realize the divine within. Combining prayer and an interpretation of the Stations of the Cross, featuring beautiful imagery, you will be led on a process of transformation. This book will help you discover the most caring, courageous, and compassionate parts of yourself. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or unity.org/shop.
Do you dread going to work every day and just pray for Friday? Get a fresh perspective on your career with Mo Fall and Bring Your Soul to Work every Thursday at 11 a.m. Central, 12 p.m. Eastern, here on unityonlineradio.org. A leadership mentor and career coach, Mo can help you go from underpaid, unsatisfied, and unappreciated to loving your life and career again. Join the show and let Mo guide you to make some real life changes. Tune in every Thursday here on unityonlineradio.org.
Call now with your question or comment, 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
So welcome back to today's show. I'm with Cindy Goodman-Stolberg, and we're talking about her book that she co-wrote with Ronald J. Fry, calling Feeling Better, Beat Depression, Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy. And we're sort of going through the 12 weeks of this therapy course, and we talked about defanging this idea of depression or dislocation that we might feel, it's a broken leg, not the end of the world. To work on drawing a social circle, to name the feelings that we're having. And there's a lot of work done in the book on that and the lists of various feelings. And then to choose your own adventure, focus in one area. You know, sometimes we're overwhelmed by all the things that life is complicated, as they say. But, you can't do it all at once, right? You have to focus. And it seems to me that when you focus in one direction, the other directions seem to be shift as well. It's almost like when Jesus, the lady, touched the hem of his garment and became whole. She only touched one point of his being, but there was wholeness from that. And it seems to work like that, right? When we get healthy in one area, it shifts other areas too.
Absolutely. And I think what's important about this model is because it is short term, we work on one area at a time and one or two very concrete goals. And then the importance is whoever you get to know what you did that helped you feel better, so that you will then be able to use those same skills on the next problem that comes up, the next relationship challenge you have, the next time you feel lonely or isolated. So you really develop very concrete, practical, common sense skills that you get to continue to use, to implement. And as you say, it helps not become overwhelmed or also not to avoid. If you talk about every problem you've ever had, you can keep talking about it, but unless you're prepared to try something different, you're not going to feel better. So we really focus, help people focus on the one area and the goal that they want to accomplish so that they feel better in the end of 12 weeks. So that's one of the other advantages of the model, is you know what you did to help yourself feel better.
And you use the SMART system, which, you know, is quite well known, right? To make your goals specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely. And that's really good, because sometimes we have these grandiose ideas, a bit like New Year's resolutions, you know, that only last a couple of days before they crash and burn, because they're not SMART. They're not measurable. They're nice ideas, but they're not practical.
Right. And I also say, like, it's simple. I know, let's say someone's goal is, well, I never want to yell at my kids again. I mean, I think number one, it's fairly unrealistic, right?
Right. Exactly.
But if you say, I would like to have a conversation with my children about screen time and discuss, have some plan as to how much time they should be spending. Now, that's a lot more achievable, and you're going to feel better. Because even let's say you stopped yelling at them 9 times and you yelled at them the 10th, you'll say, oh, gee, I didn't achieve what I wanted. So it's very important to take small steps at a time and to say, what am I going to be saying or doing when I feel better? That really helps you accomplish what you want to accomplish.
I love that. You know, my late wife used to say, let's not set ourselves up for failure. And there's a lot of wisdom to that, you know. If you set an unattainable goal, however nice it sounds, you know, you're just setting yourself up for failure, and you feel worse then because it doesn't happen. So it's not about not arguing again. It's am I going to be mindful of when I do, and are there other strategies I can use, you know, to short circuit it or to see it in a different light. So I think these things are very creative, aren't they? Because they give us options for behavior rather than, like you said, right or wrong. It's not black or white here. It's skill. The Buddha called it skillful means, you know, skillful ways of approach and like that. And you offer many different varieties in the book. We can't get into all of them, but that's the worth of getting the book and reading it.
Yes, because there's ideas in terms of how you can start a conversation. We give you specific words to do it. We give you kind of role play scenarios of what a communication analysis. Okay, if I say this, what might my partner or might the person I'm talking to respond? What might be the best outcome? So if I want to talk to my husband and say, you know, I'd like us to talk more frequently, and the best outcome is always going to be this huge conversationalist and talk nonstop, and the worst outcome is he's going to stay exactly the same. But the most realistic is he's going to try a little harder and be willing to converse a little bit more than he does right now. So you know what? So it's nice to have realistic expectations of yourself and other people too, and to really understand that not one person is going to meet your needs all the time, exactly when you want them to be met, and exactly the way you want it met. That just, to me, I don't know what you think, Paul, but I don't think it's realistic, right?
Well, no, absolutely. You know, I'm doing this the very thing this week myself, because when I was young, I used to camp all the time, but I haven't camped now in 30-some years. But my wife had this hankering to camp, and so she got her daughter to buy her a tent for Christmas. What a lovely Christmas present. Mm-hmm. And so once the tent is here, you know, then the camping can't be far behind. So this is what we're doing in West Texas. You know, we camped last night, and it was great. I loved it.
Right.
So, but it wouldn't be the first thing I'd think of, you know, at my age. You know, I'm usually looking for some nice lodge where I can relax or whatever. But actually, it was good to stretch. You know, that doesn't mean I have to be camping all the time. Right. I may say no. I still like my lodges or whatever. Right.
But you're trying it. You're open.
But we're trying. We're open, right?
I'm open to trying, and I may not like it. I may not go again. But she's certainly happy that I tried it.
She is. She's very happy. She's sitting right with me right now, smiling.
And did she tell you how much she appreciates you?
Oh, absolutely, she does. Yeah. Good. And she's promised to dress up all next week, you know, because we have to go to a wedding, so she's going to dress up anyway. So I get the country girl and the city girl.
You're a lucky man.
So, yeah, I'm a lucky man. So who can I share with? That's one of the chapters. What do you mean?
Well, I think the important part is being able, that makes a huge difference, even though you sometimes think I have to solve this myself. Or I have to, you know, I shouldn't speak to people about my struggling because they're going to think poorly of me. That isn't the case. That you need to open up. You need to kind of ask other people. You need to maybe say, you know, I'm struggling with how to manage my teenage children. Did you ever have difficulties like that? Right. And so the other person will start laughing and they'll say, of course I did. Well, how did you handle it? What's your advice? What, you know, the best advice you will ever get is from another. Like if you're up all night with your newborn baby, no one understands that better than another parent who's been up all night with their newborn baby, right?
Right.
Or
exactly.
Someone who's going through a divorce. They're going to understand what it was like and how did you manage and what did you do? Or someone who lost a job, right? Or lost a loved one. You know, being able to reach out to other people and not only spend time with them, whether you're going to talk about your problems or not, it also sometimes takes your mind off what you're dealing with. And if you need just to be with others and listen to them, then that's helpful too. So there's so many reasons to find the who's, the who's, the who's in your life, right? Who can you talk to? Who can you learn from? Who can you help? Who has some ideas for you? Who can... Those are invaluable, talking to other people, right?
You know, we set up a group in the church called the Sensitivity Group. It was for people who, you know, for sensitives. And that attracted a lot of people who were sensitives, and it was successful. And I think that's good because sensitives don't always, by their very nature, you know, they don't want to group together. They feel, you know, too tender for that. So it was good to provide that. And I think we have to seek ways, you know, that we can have our needs met. Right? Not everybody you can talk to about a certain thing. But like you said, if somebody's got some experience with grief issues, then, you know, they would be a sensible ear to listen to what you might be going through.
It also gives you hope, too. You know, I think what happens when you've seen that someone has gone through what you have and they've come out the other side or they're doing better, it really gives you a picture of what may be something you can look forward to in the future, right?
So as long as you're willing to say, you know, well, I should say, as long as you're not willing to say, well, it was all easy for them because, but in my, you know, case, I've got all these things. And we do that too. We self-sabotage, right?
Yeah. And maybe your circumstances are a little bit different. But the point is how is that going to help you? If you think of only the ideas that aren't going to work for you, and really it's up to you. It's up to every individual to decide if they want to make a change or they want to continue to feel lousy. And if you're not feeling good, then the other thing is, how is that going to impact other people? Are other people going to want to help you? Are they going to want to talk to you? You're only going to create a terribly isolated situation. And so, I mean, you have to recognize that I think we're all responsible for doing, you know, our own happiness. I don't think other people are there. And we can do a wonderful job of helping ourselves feel better. That's what I think is so valuable. We can do it. We really have the capacity to help ourselves.
I'm a big advocate of reframing something. And your chapter on, you know, out with the old, in with the new, and the following one on expectations, you know, is if you expect something to happen a certain way, it generally does. And but do we have to have that expectation? You know, maybe we don't. And I was a very nostalgic, wallowing in nostalgia when I was young, and it came from my Welsh upbringing, I think. You know, yeah. we're such a poetic, melancholy people. But there's a good to that. You know, it's good to wallow in, and I love Van Morrison. He's another wallower in nostalgia. But, you know, you can also say, yeah, that's fine. It's got its place. But, you know, I don't have to go there all the time. I don't have to be crying all the time about...
You can put a limit on your wallowing, right?
Put a limit on your wallowing. There we go.
Right, absolutely. And the other thing, the other opposite to that is when you said, you know, some people also, if you look online and you look at media, there's all this glamorization of how fabulous everything is, right? Nobody posts a picture about when they're miserable and having a terrible time. They only post the happy social occasions and when they're looking great, right? So we sometimes don't realize that that isn't reality either. That something in between, that feeling content and feeling okay, is pretty much, I think, what people feel most of the time. You know, people aren't, you know, people might say, oh, I want to be happy. Well, I don't know exactly what that means. I don't think everybody's happy every minute of the day.
No, exactly.
So really finding something in the middle where you're feeling productive, you're doing something useful, and you have meaningful people and relationships in your life, to me, is really what I want to accomplish, what I've tried to convey to my children and grandchildren as well, you know?
Well, and I think that's the idea behind, you know, this no makeup movement, you know, that some people are not wearing makeup, right?
Yeah.
And they post their pictures on. And, you know, the idea is to show that, you know, there's another side. It's not all about the glamour. And that's good, I think, you know, but then it can become an extreme too, you know. Well, oh, no, you never wear makeup. It could be a balance, right? But but we don't want to buy into it. It has to be a certain way. I think there's always a danger there, you know, because then you get locked into, you know, appearance in this situation or a certain, you know, I'm always happy. And we have this in Unity, or we used to, you know, you're in Unity. So I'm happy all the time. You know, everything's great, you know, because I'm a spiritual being, whatever, you know, and you can't allow yourself to be down, you know, because you're feeling the wrong thoughts. So you can't, if you've got a cold, you must have been feeling the wrong thoughts. I don't think we do that sort of metaphysical malpractice anymore, but there's a tendency sometimes, you know, when you're in a positive thinking environment, you always have to be positive. Wrong, right?
You're right. You know what? That's not realistic. You know, you're allowed to feel what you're feeling. It helps to be, you know, kind of keep, you know, not be too extreme, to manage those feelings in a way that's going to be functional. But on the other hand, you know, it's also, it's important to use humor, I think, sometimes, right? Like in your...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like I love being able to, you know, if someone's criticizing you or someone's, you know, bullying you, you can respond by just saying, oh, gee, thanks for the advice. I'll take it into advisement or whatever.
Yeah,
there we go. Like it's just important to also, I think, establish what your values are. What is important to you? Is it important to have an honest relationship? Is it important to be reliable with someone else? Is it important to be responsible? Do you want to be encouraging of people? Like you said, when you talk about the outside and the inside, I'm sure these are values and things that you probably talk about all the time in your work, right?
Right, of course.
You know, so I do think those are things that we have to remind ourselves, and you have to see can have a meaningful relationship with someone who's going to treat you well. A lot of people sometimes don't do that. They have very low expectations for themselves, you know, and you don't have to settle for, you know, people treating you badly. It's not necessary.
Well, I think we have to remind ourselves that every moment is a miracle. You know, every day that we successfully maneuver through life is a day of accomplishment. The other day, somebody on Facebook, you know, it can happen on Facebook, somebody doesn't like what you said and accused me of being a man of no accomplishments, a little non-entity or whatever. And I sort of laughed about it, but I thought, you know, I've got grandchildren. You mentioned those earlier. I love my wife. She loves me. You know, That's the greatest accomplishment you could ever have in your life, you know.
Absolutely.
You've got a body that's a literal miracle, you know, of trillions of cells all coming together in harmony. Mm-hmm. That's a miracle. So we have to remember what's really important, right? And so when you do, you know, ego's not going to be affected by somebody saying, oh, you know, you're a pipsqueak or whatever, because, okay, fine, but that's just not true, you know, because I'm a beautifully made human being able to maneuver through life.
And also just to savor those moments, like you said, I think unfortunately people, when they get depressed, then for one of the symptoms is negativity.
Yes.
So it's easy to feel negative. But, and it's interesting because often my clients will describe doing something that they thought was positive. And no matter what the outcome, you need to pay attention to the effort you've made to try it a little bit differently, right? So mm-hmm. even if you reached out or to someone, I'm not sure if my grammar was correct, but if you try to reach out to someone and then their response wasn't what you'd hoped for, it doesn't mean you shouldn't still feel okay about trying. Be proud
right.
of yourself for making the effort. And often they'll really gloss over an accomplishment. So I urge people to sit with the feeling of, gee, that was great. I tried it. I did it. I'm proud of myself. To really let that feeling sink in and allow yourself the good feeling of what you're feeling at that moment. That's an important aspect as well.
And it's interesting in that regard, too, about gratitude lists. You know, if you ask somebody to do a gratitude list, the usual response at the beginning is, oh, no, I've got nothing to be grateful for. Oh, I don't want to do that. It's too woo-woo, whatever. But then they start, you know, you force them to start it.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, there's pages and pages of things, you know, because when we remember, you know, actually what there is to be grateful for, there's more and more things to be there. That's a beautiful thing, because I think it's a way of shifting, you know, showing this reframing again from ain't it awful to, well, wait a minute, there is a lot to be grateful for, actually. And that's a wonderful shift in the right direction, I think.
And simple things. I know that with my grandchildren and children that we say, okay, what were the three good things that happened today, right?
Yeah.
My husband will always, his opening line, and everybody laughs, is, I woke up. Right.
Uh-huh.
So it's like,
sure.
You know what? That's a good day.
It is a good day. Absolutely. Well, you know, because we know how precious life is, and it can be snuffed out so quickly and easily. So every day is a precious moment. Yes.
And we're really hoping, I mean, what we're hoping too is that therapists and social workers and you know, religious leaders want to learn IPT as well, because Ron and I train clinicians all over the world, and we wanted to disseminate this model wider than it had been, so that the people could go and say, where do I find, either read it themselves and do some of the work themselves, or say, I want to find an IPT therapist. I want to work with someone who knows this model, that's highly recommended in a lot of treatment guidelines, that's very here and now, it's very collaborative and structured. And to be able to say, I want to use this to feel better than I feel right now. So we both do training for clinicians, and we offer information to individuals. And I also do some online therapy as well, if people are interested.
Right. Good, good. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, unfortunately, many psychotherapeutic approaches can go on for years. You know, we never get to a goal, right? And I like that about, you know, your modality, because it's like these 12 weeks where you've got something to accomplish, and the last couple of weeks, you know, okay, you've done the rehearsal, but excuse me, sorry.
Bless you.
You know, you've done rehearsing, but now you have to do it. You have to jump off the cliff,
jump off
if you
the
like.
Cliff. Yeah. Go do it. Go ride the bike. If you're learning how to ride a bicycle, just go. And no matter, you're going to feel anxious. You're going to feel nervous. It's not familiar. But that doesn't still mean you shouldn't do it. So
give it a
try, see how it works. You can always go back to your old ways if you don't like it, if it doesn't work for you. But really, we find people there's a very low dropout rate. We feel people, it makes a lot of sense to them when they do this, and they really do feel a lot better after they've tried it than they did before.
So. And then week 12 is do your happy dance. What does that mean for you?
That means to really take pleasure and pride in your hard work and accomplishments. You know, take the time to say, I did a good job, and to share that, and to share that with other people, right? To share, you know, I worked hard, I'm feeling better, I appreciate you being there for me when I was down and when I was struggling, and it's meant a lot to me. And I hope I can be there for you in the future if you need me as well, right? So that's the happy dance. Go dance. Go enjoy yourself.
Well, and unfortunately, us human beings have a hard time doing that sometimes because we're so critical, right? Even when we've succeeded, like you said, we don't notice the accomplishment. We're on to the next problem or the next thing that we have to deal with. And instead of taking time to do our happy dance, you know, to appreciate it. It's not doing the happy dance like, look at me, I'm so special, right? It's more. I'm joyous, and I want you to be joyous too, and enjoy this experience with me.
And it's uplifting others as well. Like, really, you know, there are times when you might want to share what you did and how it helped you. Maybe that'll help someone else as well. You know,
right.
So you're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for others. You really, and you're showing your children and family, you're modeling that you can make changes and that you can improve things, and you've taken responsibility for yourself and made yourself feel better. So there's a lot of things that you're doing when you're sharing that with other people, right?
Absolutely. So, folks, I hope we've given you an idea of what this modality is about and what this book is about. There's a lot more detail. We follow these four folks and their specific needs in a lot of depth through the book, and that's very helpful. We haven't got into specifics necessarily today, but there's a lot of specifics in the book. Let me ask you something. Before we close, Cindy, if there's one piece of advice, if you're listening to this show and I need something today, what would you give them?
Well, just reach out to someone. Just please don't keep everything inside. Know that there are people who will be caring and concerned about your well-being, and you're not alone. You really aren't alone. We've all had our ups and downs. And if you're struggling in any way, reach out to someone, take a look at the book, really, you know, reach out. I'm happy to hear from people as well. People can email me at cindystolberg@gmail.com or feelingbetterthebook.com. And I'd love to, you know, converse with you or give you some ideas how to feel better. So I appreciate, Paul, you giving me the opportunity to talk to you and to all your listeners. It's really appreciated.
All right. Well, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Cindy. Next week, minister, yogi, author, and poet, and the founder of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose. She's also a fellow radio host on Unity Online Radio. Ellen Grace O'Brien joins me. She's been on the show before, and it's always a thrill to have her. Such a deep, grounded, wise woman. She's going to talk about her new book. It's called The Jewel of Abundance, and she focuses on abundance from the Hindu point of view. But as always, it's full of wonderful love and wisdom. So I think we're going to enjoy that show next week. But right now, it's been a joy to talk about this particular subject. And again, we want to thank Cindy for being on the show, and I hope Ronald is jealous. He couldn't be with us. Not really. But it's been great. And thank you so much for being willing to be on the show. But also thank you for all the work you're doing, because it's so important right now, isn't it, in our world?
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's an honor and a pleasure to work with people. And please, you know, thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you. And folks, if you like this and other shows, check them out on Unity Online Radio Network. All my shows are archived, so there's quite a few hundred of them now. Check out my website, pauljohnroach.com. Some of my latest writings, blogs are on there too. But in the meantime, have a great week, and hopefully talk to you soon. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio. the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IamDivine2022.